But I was just basically beset by disaster. I couldn't ask for what I wanted. I was just really passive. I found it, never asked what I wanted. I couldn't do it. I needed a lot of alcohol to get naked. I hated my body. So I want, the will was there, but I was really, you know, had a lot of issues. And so I was writing about them and unpicking them. And what happened, to cut a long story short, is I just, by exploring my sexuality, I just, you know, it was just one of the most transformative, life-enhancing experiences I've ever, you know, that's ever happened. I feel I found, you know, I got to really find myself as a friend. I got to explore pleasure, but I also really found my power.
Welcome to Doing It with me, Hannah Witten, where we talk all things sex, relationships, dating, and our bodies. Hi everyone, welcome back to Doing It. Since we last spoke, I have turned 29 years old. Yes, happy lockdown birthday to me. But this podcast is not about me. It's about my wonderful guests. And today I have the incredible Lucy Ann Holmes with me. Lucy is an author and activist. She has written many, many books, mostly rom-coms and what the publishing industry likes to call chick lit. She's written a sex memoir, and we talk about all of that and a new book she's edited called Women on Top of the World, What Women Think About When They're Having Sex. The book has stories from 51 different women of all ages from 19 to 74 years old, sharing their experiences with sex and sexuality. We talk about the stories in the book, the gorgeous sensual illustrations with each story, and what Lucy thinks about during sex. Lucy is also on a journey to becoming a sacred sexual priestess, and we talk about the connection between spirituality and sexuality. And of course, we answer some of your questions, like, is it normal to think about what you're having for dinner during sex? Quick content warning before we get into the interview, there are mentions of abuse and forced sex fantasies, and we'll leave timestamps for when this is in the show notes if you want to skip over that part. And this is just a friendly reminder from me to look after yourself. As usual, you can find more info and links to everything we talk about in this episode in our show notes over at doingitpodcast.co.uk. And please let us know what you think over on our Twitter or Instagram at doingitpodcast. And without further ado, here is my conversation with Lucy Ann Holmes. Welcome to Doing It, Lucy. How are you doing?
I'm really good. Thank you, Hannah. How are you doing?
I'm not bad. I'm so excited to like get into this. I've been reading some of the stories from the book that you edited that I think is out now or out tomorrow by the time this podcast episode is coming out. It's by my bed and I like read a few stories every night. It's very comforting.
Yeah, I'm so excited actually. I've never been so excited. I think this is the seventh book I've sort of, you know, written. And this is the one I'm most excited about actually. And I was the most excited to hold this one in my hand, I think, because I interviewed 51 women and they're from all over the world, of all ages. And I asked them this question, you know, what do you think about when you have sex? And, you know, obviously our interviews were very long and covered a lot more than that, but you know, I just felt it was such an honor to hear these stories and to collate them in this book, and then these amazing international illustrators have responded to the stories. So it's this, it's just beautiful, collaborative, taboo breaking. I love it. So yeah, I feel excited for it to be out there in the world.
It feels like a beautiful collage book. Like it needs to go on like a coffee table or like in a place where if you have guests around, when we're allowed guests around again, that somebody could just like pick up and flick through and like see the pictures and then maybe read a few stories. Oh, it would be a great toilet book.
Yes, I think. Yeah, perfect. These stories are about 750 words and that's a really good toilet title, I think.
Yeah, just like because each story itself is quite short. So you could have a little bite-sized like info about what one woman thinks about during sex whilst you're
I love it. When you've got guests, they probably wouldn't be expecting that to be your toilet reading. I really like it. I also love how it's illustrated, because I think there's something about looking at these beautiful illustrations and it's such a sex positive experience, I think. Yeah. You know? Yeah.
I think one of my favorite things about the illustrations is like, because the illustration for the story comes after. And so I'm from my perspective, when I'm reading it, I like have my own thoughts about it. And then seeing the illustration is like, oh, that's somebody else's interpretation and like what they took out of it as well. So it's like a conversation happening like between the pages as well, which is really cool.
Oh, I love you saying that. Yes, I think so. Yeah, great.
So I'm curious, like, how did this book come about, and like, how did you find all of these women to interview and tell you all about their sex lives?
Yeah. Well, it's not my idea. I can't take the credit for this wonderful idea. It's a really great editor at Quirkus called Katie Folane, and she contacted my agent and just, you know, was like, would Lucy consider doing this? And I met with her and she told me the idea, and I'd already written a memoir about my own sex life called Don't Hold My Head Down, which is, I think, how she'd sort of come across me. So she knew I was really comfortable with the subject matter. Mm-hmm. And I was sort of thinking, oh gosh, that does sound amazing. But I just didn't know whether I could do it. I was like, well, I've never done interviews. I've never collated interviews. And like you said, I don't know whether, are people going to talk to me about this aspect? Can I hold these, you know, do these conversations? So I did a few sort of sample interviews with friends just to see, you know, if I'm offered this, you know, do I think I can do it? And I did these sample interviews and I just loved it. And then I was like, oh, please offer it to me because I really want to do it. And luckily, you know, it was offered to me, and I've just felt so blessed to be given this opportunity to do it and to be able to witness and share these women's stories. And it was quite tricky at times to find the women. I mean, in a way, so there's 51 women, but and I it definitely wasn't hard to find 51 women. I could probably have found 51 women from the UK and certain people, I'd say, who have sort of maybe maybe they're working around sexuality, they've explored their sexuality. Mm-hmm. They, you know, were probably more keen to chat. But it was quite hard to find, you know, it was really important to us that the book, you know, was as diverse as possible and showed, you know, it showed, you know, a lot of different, you know, the youngest woman is 19, the oldest is 74. And, you know, we wanted a big cross, you know, we wanted it to be a big cultural mix across the world, but also, you know, mm-hmm. sex looks different for everybody, you know, and so, you know, we wanted sort of different types of relationships show, you know, there's a non-binary person, there's a trans woman in there, you know, we really wanted it to, you know, to have a big scope of diversity. So, yeah. And there were some, so I did struggle with some, you know, sometimes, you know, I found it very hard. There were a few stories that came in right at the end and I was getting quite worried that, you know, I wouldn't be able to represent certain people. And I did find it hard because it's not everybody is going to want to sit and, you know, go into this aspect of themselves. You know, I was really saying, you know, like, take me there. You know, I was basically saying, you know, take, you know, what does sex look like for you at the moment? Can you take
like, no judgment, but it's so hard sometimes. Like you said, like, it would have been easy for you to find people who are already have a hobby or making a living, like, talking about sex or like in the sexuality field, like, they're ready to go, like myself included. Like, I'm easy, can talk about it. But people who are already talking about sex openly aren't the only people who experience sexuality.
Yeah.
Like, everybody experiences it to different extents. And yeah, one of the things I do really love is just how like different all of the stories are, but also like you can see some of them like fumbling through it, like not knowing how to understand what it is that they're experiencing. Mm-hmm. They're kind of going, I think about this when I'm having sex, and like, this is what I like, and this happens, but I don't really know what it means. Yeah. And I'm not really sure how I'm supposed to feel about it. And I love that because that's just so true of so many people.
I do. And it's really interesting because one thing that really, you know, struck me is that wherever you are in the world, and that, you know, it is echoed from the 19-year-old from the UK who just said, I don't feel I had any good sex education, you mm-hmm. know. I was taught how babies are made, but I wasn't talking about, you know, relationships and sex. And I felt, you know, she said, oh, you know, I got my sex. I wanted to know what BDSM was. And I ended up on some BDSM forums. And that's how I learned about consent. Yeah. That's how I learned about really practical aspects of trying to navigate this part of myself. But wherever women were in the world, that when I was talking to them, this was reiterated. There was no sex education. And that was often from families, from school, from society. You know, there is this sense that we're just going to brush this thing under the carpet and not talk about it. But we're supposed to suddenly, you know, work out how to do it. Yeah, there's this wonderful story of this woman, Anita from India. She's 55 and she was so wonderful. But she said, you know, she was married at, I think, 14. And she'd had sexual abuse prior to that. And she was married to a man a lot older than her. And she didn't know that she was supposed to have pleasure. She didn't know there was anything, you know, that female pleasure was even a thing. And she said, I ended up being on top one night. And I got all these feelings and I was like, oh my gosh. And I had no idea this I could feel like this. So there's a sense that against all odds, we somehow find this way to explore this pleasure and I think there's a sense that a tide's turning. What was great with Anita is she was saying, you know, it feels like it's changing. And, you know, I look back and now there's these, you know, this younger generation of women talking about this far more openly. So you definitely feel what I think is a sense of a real reclamation, a sense of a tide turning and a reclamation of female pleasure, female power.
Yeah, definitely. It's women telling their own stories about their own sexualities and, like you said, kind of discovering it for themselves because everybody else failed to provide that education. It's wild to me because we teach babies how to walk, talk, go to the toilet, eat. And yet we don't teach them like how to talk about sex or relationships or like what it is and do that kind of stuff, like how your body feels good.
Exactly. And then I think that's sort of quite hard because a lot of the stories of the younger women, there's this real sense that, you know, a lot of the thoughts around sex are, am I doing it right? Do I smell wrong? Do I look weird? You know, there's this sense of like, this idea that, you know, a body could be wrong or that something you're doing could be wrong. And I think what's nice is actually is the book is done in sort of age order. So you get old, what I love is this sense of the fuck it gets louder as you get, the women get older.
I'm like in the middle of the book, so I'm like waiting to get to that stage.
I love it. So you get these women in their 50s, like postmenopausal, and they're like, right. So that's when you get like the women who are really going like big into their tantra, or there's one who's so into her BDSM, and they're just like, this is what I want, you know, and there's quite an unashamedness about that, which I really love. I really love that.
Oh, I love that. I hadn't noticed that it was going up in age. I wonder why. I just hadn't even noticed that, but now I'm going to obviously see it as I keep going through. I can't wait to get to the older people. The silver sex, as they call it.
Oh, I like it.
Yeah, I've just heard that being thrown around. I like it a lot. Okay, so you interviewed a lot of people about what they think about during sex. And so I kind of have to throw it at you. What do you think about during sex?
I love that you've asked this. It's so funny because I was interviewing for a year, really, and working on this book for a year. And then no one asked me it. And I've obviously been really thinking about it. And then I just got asked on a Facebook group. And then I was like, oh, I can't believe no one's asked me it. And now you're asking me on a podcast.
Yeah. I want to know.
My thoughts are sort of they're kind of in a few different categories, I think. So I've been with my partner now for six. We've got a 5-year-old, but I got pregnant very quickly. So I think we went together like over 6 years, maybe 6.5 years, maybe. And so we're in that, you know, it's a kind of, longer term relationship and how to make sex work in that way. Because obviously sex at first is relatively easy because you can't keep your hands off each other. And then how do you keep that aliveness there with this, you know, with sexuality, especially when you're both tired and you're bringing up children, etc.
Yeah.
So my thoughts tend to be, but we're both, you know, I really love sex, and that's kind of, you know, and we're both quite into it, so we are quite good at that. But one thing I noticed that I think of, particularly at the beginning sometimes, is I have thoughts that are like, am I into it? Is he into it? Is this going through the motions? And I have a little bit of that. And then what I do, and then if I feel that maybe I'm, because I think we're so in the mind, you know, this is just like this Western thing, you know, busy lives, lots of, you know, stuff coming at us. So we tend to kind of live in our minds and in our thought streams. And what I love about sex is this opportunity to get into the body and just let the body kind of, you know, do what it wants to do and listen to the wisdom of the body. But sometimes I have to kind of, you know, I've been stomping around in my mind all day, so I have to get into allow that to happen. So one thing I find, I've noticed I start doing, and it's really helpful, is if I think I'm in those thoughts, because if I'm in those thoughts, I can block sex, really. And because I love really not being in thoughts with sex. I love just being in the flow of my body and my breath. That's where it really works for me, and that's where the body kind of just starts leading it. And so if I notice that I'm having these thoughts, a bit like, is he into it? Am I into it? Those sort of things. Then what I really think about doing is I think about opening from my heart to him. And I think I read this in a David Dada book a while ago. I'm not that always that into David Dada, but this thing's really stuck with me. So I just think about opening to him. And then even opening beyond him, like just like opening to that experience.
Is it like a visualization?
Yeah, I think it is, because I kind of feel it from my heart. So I just sort of imagining my heart really opening to him, and it takes me away from my thoughts going, am I into this? I just go into my heart, and there's something really allows me to surrender into it a bit more. So that can happen with my thoughts. I also have, so I try not to be in fantasy really in sex, because I find it can take me to orgasm quite quickly. And then, and what I really love is slow build-ups to orgasm, because then I just get those really deep, kind of more vaginal orgasms. Yeah, because if I go into fantasy, it becomes a bit of like a quick clitoral orgasm. And then I end
in fact, one of the women
in the book describes it. She's like, if I do that, I've blown it all in a cheap deal. She's like, I so get that. So I like to not go into fantasy and not get there so quickly. So just to, but sometimes fantasies do come in, you know, and my fantasies tend to involve my partner being with another woman. So it's it's as though I'm not me. Maybe he's with another woman or even two other women.
Are you in the room or are you just like witnessing it in as a fantasy, but in the fantasy, you're not there?
Maybe I'm sort of witnessing it. Yeah, I'm sort of witnessing it. So there's a couple of little scenarios and I'm more witnessing it, but I'm kind of not really there, but sort of witnessing it. and this is something, and I'm always really curious as to where those fantasies come from, because at the start of my relationship with my partner, it was an open relationship, more of an open relationship. And then I felt pregnant and that kind of just sort of, before we knew it, you know,
closed it.
yeah, it did really, you know, because suddenly it's like, oh my gosh, you know, for me, it was really, I really went from that being, you know, and I really love the non-monogamy, that what I found with non-monogamy is you have to be really honest. So the communication is amazing. And actually, I think a lot of times in relationships, you know, we get quite busy and we stop really communicating. And actually non-monogamy allows that communication to really be there, and that freedom and that kind of you know, that aliveness that people feel with their sexuality, with their own power, blah, blah, blah. And then that can kind of come and be quite electric together. That not being said, the other side of it is, you know, which I found when pregnant was just that, oh my gosh, it was just so destabilizing. I just really wanted to feel safe with my partner, and that we were creating this nest and this. And so him going off was just really, I really couldn't handle it. So I don't know whether, so it's interesting that I have these, but I have a fantasy. It's always quite aroused me. So my partner's quite a really good lover. So there is a part of me, like, he's giving pleasure to other women. It's just like, oh, it's just like,
that's
really
joy.
Nice. Yeah. To see other women really enjoying themselves. It's really great. Yes. So, and do I think about anything else? Oh yes. So then I have more practical thoughts like, do I want a sex toy? Do I want to go on top? do I want to
right, yeah, the managing of the situation.
Yes, do I want, it'd be nice if you played with my nipples. Oh, I'll play with my nipples. Oh, he's playing with those sort of coming in. Do I want to play? Do I want to give a blink? Yeah, sort of a bit like that.
Yeah.
But I notice there's a really nice dreamy quality actually when I have them when I'm having sex. So it's more like, oh, do I want to do this?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That like makes a lot of sense. I still feel like those thoughts are still very much in the moment because they apply to what you're currently doing.
Yeah, absolutely. And I find even, and I find I do have thoughts like I'm like, oh, is this her? Do I want this now? I'm actually, have we done this and I'm not really ready for this? Do we need to hold back a bit? So, you know, there can be those sort of things as well. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. I think it's interesting that you brought up about the fantasies thing as well, because I don't know, I remember growing up and the general narrative that people would talk about in terms of fantasies was that it was absolutely not acceptable to think about other people or things or have other sexual fantasies whilst you're having sex. Mm. Or even if you're like masturbating and if you're not masturbating about your current partner, then that is cheating, that is bad. Like that's something that I just remember coming across just like as an adolescent and as a young person, like growing up as well. It's just like, that was the message I received. And then like as an adult, when I have fantasies that aren't about my partner, I'm like, this is fine. Why was I like taught otherwise? This is so, that's so weird.
I know, there's so much policing around sexuality and you don't realize how strong it is, do you? And then suddenly
the policing even goes into our minds.
I know.
We're not even doing anything. We're just thinking. Yeah, it's wild. I also wanted to kind of like go back a bit as well, because you mentioned that you wrote a book about your sex life. And I wondered, like, what made you want to write that? And what was that process like, kind of like sharing a sex memoir?
Yeah, I know.
The audacity.
Why did I do that? Good question. So what had happened is I used to write rom-coms, chick lit. So I wrote for years and years ago, I had a blog about my disastrous love life. And through that,
it's where all good things start.
So through that, I then got a two-book deal, and I wrote these, which I thought were just funny, like rom-coms, and then they were really marketed with like cupcakes on the cover and very chick-litty. So it was kind of an interesting foray into publishing. So I wrote four of these novels, and at the end, I was starting to feel, you know, I kept getting, why have you put a cupcake on the cover? My character's got nothing to do with cupcakes. I've got no relationship to cupcakes. Mm. Why are these pink cupcakey covers? You know, and I was coming up and I wanted to write a book at one point about a woman who'd had an abortion. And I was told I couldn't. And I just kept feeling, God, the female experience is so much more interesting than I'm being allowed to portray in these books. And anyway, I'd written four novels, like I've done one a year, and I just felt, had this sense that I wanted to be in the world and not sort of, I had this idea that if I wrote another book, I'd be going underground into this like cave for another year with these voices in my head. And I was like, no, I want to be in the world. And I ended up writing a blog, and the blog was called How to Start a Sexual Revolution. And I just had found, I basically had an epiphany one night watching porn. And
oh, amazing. And I wonder how many people have epiphanies watching porn.
Yeah. And, It was just, you know, just in a big free porn site, and there was like, you know, in that way where you're going like, what do I want to look at? And there's always, it's a bit like real shopping, isn't it? It takes you a long time to find that thing that you really want to look at. And there was just this image, just this thumbnail image of this, I'll say she's a girl because she looked like a girl, and she was having semen squirted in her face. And that wasn't anything unusual, but it was just how young she looked. And I just found myself really like, you know, I sort of closed my computer down for a bit, and I was just like, oh God, I hope she's all right, you know. And then it really started me thinking, you know, I'd had these amazing, you know, I love those, you know, before you go to have a little wank, you have these great like stirrings, don't you? It's all physical, like, oh, these lovely feelings. So, and what did I do? I took them to a laptop, and then now suddenly I'm worried about somebody I've never met. And it just was just really got me thinking that night. And I started typing loads of things into Google, like good sex and great sex. And the thing I remember typing was beautiful sex. And I typed in beautiful sex, and on the first page of Google was just like things like, I was offered things like films to watch, like Daddy Loves to Hate Fuck Daughter.
Right.
You know, really, you know, just sort of like, I was like, wow, this is the first page of Google. Generally, if you type in beautiful conservatory or beautiful pastel sort. Forget something we all think is quite nice, but you type in beautiful sex and, you know, the results were like, you know, quite dark. And there was a video of a woman giving a guy a blowjob while he pushed her head down and this advert shagger slapper was flashing. And I was really like, wow. And I just remember thinking, what have we done to sex? And I kept thinking about my young nieces sort of curious about their sexual awakening, turning on porn and just seeing this, you know, typing in beautiful sex and getting this, and just really got me thinking. So I started, and then I thought, well, Lucy, you're hardly raising sex to some divine art form here, sat masturbating to online pornography. And I was like, okay, fair point, you know. And then I thought, what do you want to explore when it comes to sex? And that was a really, you know, kind of like transformative question, because I'd never asked myself. I was in my 30s and I'd never asked myself what I really wanted to experience when it came to sex. Mm. So I made a big list and I was like, right, I'm a sexual pioneer. I'm going to go and explore these things.
But I love lists.
Yeah, me too.
Just needed to put that out there.
But I was just basically beset by disaster. I couldn't ask for what I wanted. I was just really passive. I found it, never asked for what I wanted. I couldn't do it. I needed a lot of alcohol to get naked. I hated my body. So the will was there, but I was really, you know, had a lot of issues. And so I was writing about them and unpicking them. And what happened, to cut a long story short, is I just, by exploring my sexuality, it was just one of the most transformative, life-enhancing experiences I've ever, you know, that's ever happened to me. I feel I found, you know, I got to really find myself as a friend. I got to explore pleasure, but I also really found my power. And it was just such a, and then, so finally answering your story. So when my agent at the time was like, Lucy, we need to get you on another book deal. Let's think about some stories to write. When you're writing chick lit rom-com stories, you're looking at a character who goes off on an adventure of discovery.
A journey.
Ultimately changed at the end for the better. And I was like, well, I've been on this journey that was really amazing. Can I write it? So I felt that for me, it was such a transformative journey. And I just thought, I wonder if I write it, whether it will, you know, you just sort of think, well, if that changes, you know, if someone's feeling small about themselves, or, you know, this book might, or hearing my story might, you know, might support somebody else on their journey. So that was kind of the reason for writing it. Yeah.
Oh, I love that. I didn't know about that history of it, of your sexual awakening. But that's brilliant. I also wanted to ask you, because in your like bio,
yes,
you're training to become a sacred sexual priestess.
I know.
And I have so many questions. What is it? How were you even introduced to it? And what what appealed about it to you that made you want to train to become one? All of the questions.
Okay, so what is it? This is quite tricky, actually. So I would say a sacred sexual priestess is somebody who connects to goddess, to a particular goddess or to various goddesses through ritual and ceremony and prayer in whatever form that takes for her. And then also,
is it related to a specific religion, or is it just kind of spirituality in general?
Well, so I connect with a goddess called Rhiannon, who is a Celtic goddess. There's an Avalonian tradition, so there's quite a kind of like a sort of remembering or a revisioning of kind of more of the Celtic pagan religions, I would say. And there's an Avalonian tradition of goddess worship and celebration, really. And the goddess that I'm really connected with is Rhiannon, and she is a goddess of love and sacred sexuality. So in a way, if I look back, it's not surprising that I was called to her. But the reason I came across it was because I was at a festival when I was heavily pregnant, actually. And in that weird way you do, I'd lost my partner and I found myself in a marquee really full of this music playing. And there was this woman, like long blonde hair, really charismatic woman, with a microphone speaking. And we were kind of moving. She was getting us to move, and then it moved into a visualization. And to this day, I don't remember what the visualization was or what she said. But it was amazing. And at the end, like we were in like groups, and there was like a group of four of us. There was a man at my feet in tears. It was just like, at the end of it, I just had this like really clear thought, this is what I want to do, and this is who I want to work with, meaning the women. Anyway, then I went off to have a baby, blah, blah, blah. But I got a flyer of hers. Anyway, and I looked her up online and I saw that she did these priestess trainings. There was nothing else. That's what she did. She did these priestess trainings in Glastonbury. And I was like, whoa, that's a bit out there. And I was like, wow, that's like, you know, I'm known for a bit of the woo-woo, but this is just taking it to the next level. So I sat on it for a few years. And then it got to the point where I was saying to my partner, I said, you remember I did that workshop thing at that festival? And I was like, I can't stop looking at this woman's website. And I'd be like, literally, I found myself 1 year just looking at it. Like, I'm like, I've checked her website 3 times a day. I don't know what I'm expecting to find on it, but I'm reading up about this sacred sexual priestess thing. And if I think about it, this is talking to me. Do I do it? And I thought, you know, we've got a kid. It means me going to Glastonbury loads of weekends over the year. It's a financial, you know, there's a financial consideration there. So I spoke to my partner about it and he's amazing. He was just like, yeah, do it. And that meant that he was left with children, son, mum and mum. And yeah, he was like, go on, if it's really talking to you, go on. So yeah, so that's how I was just pulled like that. And I wasn't really thinking about it. And I didn't know much about kind of goddess priestess traditions. I was just pulled to this teacher. And I just thought, mm-hmm. there's going to be something here for me. And actually the first year of training is really about self-development, really. It's about just going into your stuff. And the goddess tradition is really beautiful. You might have heard about maiden, mother, crone, these the aspects of the goddess.
I think so, but I'm yeah. but also those words remind me of Game of Thrones.
Yeah, and I haven't seen Game of Thrones, so I really need to.
It's like one of the religions that's like 7 aspects of the gods, and like one of them is a maid, one of them is a crone. I don't know, but it probably, you know, it's taken from like. Yeah.
So you explore aspects of the goddess, but they represent also aspects of a woman's life. And also everything's very cyclical. So it can be seasons of the year as well. It can be menstrual cycles. It's a very kind of, yeah, there's, so, you know, if you think, so the aspects would be maiden, wild maiden is the first, then pathfinder, then lover, mermaid, mother, ooh. Yeah, queen, crone, and another soul song singer. So basically you explore these different aspects and look at your own life, really. And I think a lot of it really is looking at where you're, like how patriarchy's worked on you in a way. This is what I think of a lot of it is, really. So how you're not kind of looking at a bit of your shadows, or where you not, might not be showing up in your power as a woman, really, or really like, yeah, feeling your kind of true essence and really kind of being, you know, who you feel you truly are. It's really hard to explain on this. So it's really good that you've asked me to do it. So I hope I'm making some. I had this amazing year, the first year, of just really exploring a lot about myself, but then also doing a lot of quite more sort of, some really beautiful devotional practices in circle with other women. And some of them will sound quite out there, but they were so beautiful. So things like yoni massage, yoni gazing, there was quite a lot of, you know, being, dance, a lot of, you know, really just sort of learning to really love your body. Very beautiful work. And then the second year is much more about learning to hold space for other people. Kind of deeper into devotional practices, but also learning really how to hold ceremonies and rituals for other people. And actually sort of tapping into what you know, how your sacred sexual priestess is going to work and going to look. So I'm still sort of exploring all that, really. But for me, it's all about, I just really want to help women particularly, but people just feel their magic, and particularly around sexuality. So
is it kind of like a sex coach, or is it like a form of sex work maybe?
Yeah, so I mean, it looks quite different for different people. So some would go more into their sex work area, so sort of more yoni massage, lingam massage, possibly that sort of thing. I am more, what I really love, and I'm still establishing it and exploring it. So, and I've been doing, you know, I've been holding kind of courses for women around body image, and I want to keep developing these sort of things. But also what I'm really liking to do is, for me, like, I went to a Catholic convent, and so, you know, I was told that sex was sinful. You know, I was, the Virgin Mary was, you know, supposed to be your, you know, to, you know, the woman sort of Christianity to respect, and she was a virgin. Mm-hmm. You know, it was there's the men were the priests, you know, God was a man. It was very much like women couldn't be holy and couldn't be sexual. So I think for me to explore sexuality that feels sacred, that feels something that's actually, rather than a sense of a divine telling me, no, this is wrong, actually, the more I explore my sexuality, there's a divine saying, yeah, this is, you know, this is what you're here for. This is, if anything, connecting you to a divine rather than a divine telling you that you shouldn't be doing that. So I really love to create opportunities for women to feel that, because I think because we've had so much religious policing of sexuality, particularly female sexuality, to create spaces where...
It's like an antidote to it.
Exactly, where there's a space where you're set. And I use a lot of visualization and meditation. So you get into this really beautiful kind of like loving, you feel all floaty and lovely vibration. And then, you know, we can have an experience where... and I tend to do, so I would lead it so the women are able to do self-touch. So I'd probably do this on Zoom so people can have cameras off and do it. But so people can, I'd be leading a visualization and the women can, you know, explore intimate touch as they go through that. But you're held in kind of a sacred, loving space. And it can be quite transformative. I hope I've done this justice by explaining it. But I think because of this, you know, because of this sort of religious shaming of sexuality, to create a spiritual place where, no, the female body is divine and sacred, can be so really transformative and really beautiful. So
I love that.
Trying to create those sort of experiences for women, really.
Yeah. Well, yeah, thank you for sharing that. It's really interesting. We've got some questions from our followers on Instagram. They've got lots of thoughts and I'd love to throw them at you. Someone asked, is it normal to think about what you're having for dinner while having sex?
It's all normal. Yes, yes, yes. There's loads of people that find that they think about other things. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's an interesting one. And you might like to explore that. You know, what is there something, do those thoughts come in at a particular time?
Are you having sex when you're hungry and maybe you should eat before?
Exactly. Yeah, because it is quite nice. You know, you can work up an appetite. And many people said the thing they like to do after sex is eat. Pizza was particularly popular. But it could be, there was another woman who said that there were certain times where she really disassociated and would start thinking about other things. And she actually, you know, so there might be, is there a time that you're disassociating within the sex act? And then maybe, you know, do you know why that is? Is there something, you know, there? Is there a reason? Is there something that's happened in your past that's causing this act to make you disassociate? So there might be a little like personal inquiry to do there with sort of real love and curiosity. But yes, it's perfectly normal. It's perfectly normal. People think about all sorts of things, and definitely food was one.
Yeah. On that, someone actually asked, what are common things that people think about during sex other than the sex itself? Mm-hmm. So food is one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I found that, there was a lot of, I think I mentioned for younger women, it tended to be, you know, worries about, you know, am I doing this right? Is it, and also worrying that particularly in heterosexual relationships, am I taking too long? Is this, do I smell? A concern for the other person, you know, and I think
what is this experience like for them?
There's this amazing American woman who I spoke to, who I think was 26, and there's Rose in the book. And she, you know, she was really great with all her, she really took me there into the experience. But there was a lot of, thinking about whether he was enjoying it. And at the end I said, oh, and do you ever think about whether you've enjoyed it? And she was like, oh, no, I don't. Maybe I will.
Yeah, I remember reading that one.
Yeah, I will next time. But there's interesting things, and it depends on what part of sex you're talking about. I thought cunnilingus was quite interesting because for a lot of women, it's, it's an opportunity for them to sit back and receive pleasure. And that can be quite loaded for women because, you know, often we're told that we're the ones we're supposed to be performing and giving it. So yeah. Actually, it's really hard. You know, like I said, people are worried about whether they're taking too long, whether he's enjoying it, whether that, you know, whether it's all weird for him. So actually sitting back and receiving pleasure can be quite hard. So there was a lot going on there. A lot of worries about not being able to come. It's like feeling there was almost a pressure to orgasm and then not orgasming. And then people's fantasies were very different. And then some people worrying that their fantasies are too dark, you know. Yeah, I mean, so many different things, you know. And then some people who have, like, there was a woman in Colombia who she likes to look at, she said, if there's any freckles or anything on my partner's chest, I like to close my eyes and imagine they're stars. And then I think she breathes the light of the stars into her. So yeah, there were some people who like to sort of, you know, play with light and things like that, like breathing in light. And yeah, so there's all different things that people think. And some people are thinking, you know, penetration was quite an interesting one because I think, you know, we're told that I think men think they have to go for hours. There's this idea that, you know, sex was great because I went for hours. And actually, so many women said, penetration is the least part of sex I enjoy. And, you know, I think one woman said 7 minutes should be the legal limit. And then I'm like, so that's quite interesting. That was quite interesting, I think.
Somebody asked, and I think this is something that we all kind of grapple with at some point, like, what does it mean when I often think about scenarios different from what is actually happening? Like, I think we all worry that it means something maybe bigger than it actually is.
And then once we worry, we've made it into a thing, so we worry even more. And I think we just all need to be really kind to ourselves. The brain's going to go all over the place. Yeah. I think it was the lady in New Zealand who she'd sort of been on quite a journey with her sexuality, and she'd been married for quite a while, and her husband, she was like, we really have a really great sexual relationship. They'd had some troubles when her children were young, and they'd really found great ways to make sex work again for them. It's a really great stories in the book. But she said, you know, their problem was, and this quite often happens in longer term relationships, so she called it the 10 o'clock rollover. And she said that really didn't work because he'd roll over, and, you know, and a lot of women said this, you get a hand on your bum and a roll over in bed, and it's just like, you know, the women are just like, that's really not doing it for me. Mm-hmm. And so they might start to feel a little bit resentful. And so they ended up stopping that. And then what they'll do now is he might go, I'm going to have a wank, and then she might end up joining him. And she says, you know, I might go into fantasy. And she said, you know, quite often there's, I like two men. She says, and I always tell my husband he's one of them, but he's generally not, you know. And I think let's just, you know, it's a lovely part of ourselves to, you know, explore with curiosity and love, but there's no should. You know, I don't think there's a should. And the more we kind of depress and deny and think, oh no, we shouldn't think that, then we kind of create things as bigger than maybe than they are. So let's go, oh, I'm thinking this, I wonder why, you know. You know, is this something that I'm wanting to bring into my sex life? You know, I know I have some people who are like, you know, I really like spanking, should I think about, you know, should I bring that in? And, you know, so there might be, you know, nice little ways to bring things in. And I think sometimes people worry that, I know, actually interesting, it's the same woman in New Zealand, but she said that she had a very Catholic upbringing, and she said that she used to have a fantasy that she was being raped with a bottle, and she was like, I couldn't get over why I had this fantasy. And then she said, I've actually been thinking about this recently, and she said, I think it's because sex was so sinful that was the only way I could have a sexual fantasy and it not be my, and me not be guilty in a way, because it was. So yeah, so I think, you know, the fantasy works in, you know, in, it can work in interesting ways, and just have, I always think with love and curiosity, just have a little look maybe at, you know, why you're having that might lead you to a little bit of lovely insight.
Somebody said to me once, which actually was a really helpful way of framing how I looked at my fantasies and what they meant, was is it the actual act that's happening in the fantasy that is the thing that I want to maybe explore in real life? Like you said, maybe a spanking, like a specific thing, or is it the dynamic of what's going on? And so maybe it's like not specifically what's happening, but it's the relational dynamic between me and whoever else is in the fantasy that is what is sexually appealing. So yeah, I think that's another interesting thing to kind of like quiz yourself about.
Yeah, absolutely.
You kind of mentioned this before when you were talking about your personal experience with sex and sexuality, about kind of coming into that like embodied feeling. And somebody actually asked, any links between life factors and people who have embodied sex? What I kind of think that they might mean from this is like, is there any type of person who's like more likely to have embodied sex? Or is it just for everyone and you can kind of practice and learn?
I think so. I mean, I know one woman I spoke to, and she was like, she said that she had a really, her name's Rahana, and she in the book, and she had this, she's in this amazing, like quite, I think it's quite a long distance love affair where, and she's so embodied in her amazingness of how she's explaining her sexual experiences. But she does say, you know, people don't have enough time for sexuality, and, you know, every part of the psyche lives in it. And, you know, I think taking time is one way to really become more embodied, because it takes a while actually to switch the brain off and to come into the body. And I think, you know, and I know, like, you know, sort of sexological body workers will talk about movement, breath and sound. So if you can you know, move and make sounds and allow your breath, and you start to come to this more embodied place, and that's really exciting. But I think so when life factors, I know I might be taking this question a little bit in the wrong way, but I do think there are some, you know, and I think motherhood is a big, what I love is the chronological order of the book, but how, you know, motherhood has, you know, it does have a really, really quite a big impact on sexuality. And I think that this is something that, having been a mum and having kind of, you know, struggled around sexuality, you know, post-birth trauma and also early motherhood, it's really lovely to hear those stories. And you get it from the women who are right in there, you know, they're right in, they've got babies and they are struggling with this aspect of themselves, and it's affecting their relationships. And, you know, and I think often the women are tired, you know, they're really tired and looking for, and this is this really interesting thing about sex and intimacy. So they might need, and whether we, they might want intimacy, but not necessarily sex, because they're tired and touched out. And they are, you know, you've got a baby wanting milk and then a partner wanting sex. And it's just like, I just want my body to be mine for a second. Yeah. Mm. And then from then I can maybe find myself. But so I think that's quite a big, that's a kind of key time. And again, that takes time, because you've got to re-come to know your body again after that. And what I love is some of the stories of women who are in that, and then there's stories of women who've gone through that. So there's a bit of a sharing of tools, I think, in the book that I really love. But I do think that that can somehow have an impact of, you know, of really, of your embodiedness. I think there's, I think also sometimes sexual trauma, you know, we can disassociate. And so, and I think how people, you know, that, and again, this is spoken about in the book, because there is, you know, as you'd expect, you know, that, you know, women sharing their stories around sexual trauma and how they have dealt with that, you know, and, you know, one woman is a young Indian woman who's had a lot of incidences, and she said, you know, I used to disassociate, and actually with my last partner, I told him that, and that's been really great. And actually from telling him that, because she was like, I always used to not to feel, I didn't want to be the one with lots of baggage. But actually telling him that really allowed me, allowed us to have better sex and me to disassociate less. So I think, yeah, again, it's all love and curiosity exploring that. And you know, communication can feel really hard, but can be really great. There's a wonderful Russian woman who, she used to think something was wrong with her for years, actually. She thought, because she couldn't orgasm, there was something wrong with her. And then she ended up buying a book by Samantha from Sex in the City. And actually hearing that here was this sort of hypersexual woman who struggled around her sexuality, she just felt so liberated to learn that there was nothing wrong with her. And mm-hmm. she sort of then, you know, really worked on her pleasure. But she then got together with somebody and she said, but she's still really worried about not being able to orgasm. And she said one of the bravest things she's ever done is saying to him, I really worry that I can't, you know, I need you to know that I don't always orgasm and I worry about it. So she shared this and I can really, because it is so hard sometimes to share this stuff. But actually when we do, it can be, and she said, it was amazing. We had the most amazing conversation because then he told me about this thing that he really liked and I would never have known had I not started this conversation.
Yeah.
So it's really lovely how
it opens up doors.
Yeah, so how conversation can really help with that embodiedness as well, because we hold these things in shame and then we create tension, etc. So sometimes just voicing that shame can just release it slightly.
And I think with orgasm as well, there's something about voicing that and letting go of the expectation or the pressure to have an orgasm, and then actually allowing yourself to experience the pleasure without it feeling like it's a means to an end.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, Lucy, thank you so much for joining me. This has been such a lovely conversation and I feel like, I don't know, just feeling all good about sexuality and everything. So thank you. Where can people find you online and what's the name of the book that we've been talking all about?
Yeah, so I'm online on Instagram and Twitter and Facebook, Lucy Ann Holmes. And the book is Women on Top of the World. And it's out 25th of February and you can buy it. I think you can sort of order it, Waterstones, Amazon, if you prefer Amazon, and all sort of major bookshops, I think.
Lovely. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you, Hannah. I love your podcast. It's been so great to be on here.
Ah, thank you. And thank you all for listening. Bye. Thank you so much for listening to Doing It. If you enjoyed it, I would really appreciate it if you left a rating and a review. You can find show notes at doingitpodcast.co.uk and do go follow us on social media, and I'll catch you in the next episode. Bye. This was a Global Original podcast.